You're listening to Called to Homeschool, episode number 54.
This is your manual to becoming the amazing homeschool mom you were called to be.
Okay, guys, welcome back.
Hello, we're back with episode, is this 54?
This is number 54.
We're going to talk about ADHD today.
Social distance episode.
Yep. You get us like this for a little while. That's how it's got to be.
I was really hoping by now we would be back together.
Me too.
So it's okay. I tried to make Karen just come over anyway. She said no.
I said no.
I'm the irresponsible one. This is... We think it's going to be a great episode because we are biased. And I think one of the beautiful things about Karen and I is that we have different opinions on how to do things, and we can both love each other for the differences of our opinions. Mm-hmm. And so we want to know that we love you for your different opinions and support you in what decision is best for you, because ultimately you are the mom and you have mothers to wish.
Dad.
Oh yeah. I don't know how many. I don't either.
Okay. But we got to put that in there just in case.
Just in case. We love you too. So you get to, like, you've heard stories about a mom going to a hospital, right? Like, no, check this. And the doctor's like, there's no reason I should check this. And you're like, no, for reals, you need to check this. And it was like, oh my gosh, there was a tumor there. And you just saved your child's life, right? Like, you know what I mean. But this is, so anyways, we support you with our decision. We're going to be talking about the hot topic of ADHD.
We were just discussing kind of our opinions and our thoughts ahead of time, and I'm gonna out you a little bit. Megan was really nervous to do this episode because we have very different opinions on this topic, and it's okay. We still love each other. So
well, yes, that's what I told Karen. I go, I love you, so like just know that. So just tell, I love you too, whether you're not. So yes. I am. Like with the name, the hippie mama, you have to just probably assume I am not pro drug. I am like, I tried to be as natural as humanly possible. I've had some pretty bad allergic reactions to medicine that left me with some lifelong stuff that I don't want. So I'm very allergic to it. And so I like to use as much natural remedies as humanly possible.
And I'm actually the same way for the most part.
Yeah.
But I do have two kids that are on medication for ADHD. And it was a huge, huge decision for me to come to. And I took a lot of convincing on my husband's part for me to go to that route. But I've seen huge benefits because of it. And so it's been good for our family. So I'll start there. I have, I'm pretty 99.9% certain that ADHD is genetic. And I don't know if that's proven or not, but that's just my own opinion because I've seen it in my family. Many of my siblings and my dad have ADHD and were never medicated growing up or anything. But from my brothers, both struggled a lot with school growing up and didn't realize till they were adults and were diagnosed as adults with ADHD. And a couple of my siblings, other siblings were also diagnosed with it as adults. And, my kids, I now have had two that have had official diagnoses as ADHD. And the second one, so you guys have heard me talk a lot about my oldest son, who is the reason I started homeschooling, because, you know, higher than average intelligence, really bright learner. And then my daughter came and she's not less intelligent in any way, but she learns so differently. And we struggled so much to get her to learn to read. And it was a really hard thing. And for several years, we were working, and she just couldn't remember her letters even. And now she reads like crazy. So she's fine. She's good. But other things that she struggled with were keeping her room clean and organization. And she would have these constant meltdowns that I just didn't know how to deal with. I'd turn her over to my husband all the time. And so there were just a lot of things there. And my husband just kept saying, we need to just, let's just get her tested. Husband is a therapist, as a lot of you already know. And so he has dealt with a lot of kids with ADHD. And so he recognized all these symptoms. And he's like, no, it's good. We're good. I can deal with this. But he really kind of pushed it. He's like, let's get her tested. So we did. And she was basically top of the charts for inattentiveness. okay, all right. So next step was where the battle came in between both of us, and I didn't want to medicate my kids. I'm trying to find all the natural remedies and tried every natural remedy I could before trying medication. And so this was not an easy decision that I came to. But I will tell you that once we made that decision and once we tried it, it was almost an overnight change in her abilities to focus and to learn and to organize her life. And it was so drastic that it was shocking to me, honestly. I was like, holy cow, this girl, she was not a different person. She was still the same person, but her mind was able to finally focus and organize things inside that she had never been able to do before. And so it was a really beautiful thing to see that happen for her. And to suddenly, within about 2 weeks, she was reading really well. And so I could see the benefits there. And when you take a test for the kids for ADHD, there's two different tests. There's one for a parent and one for a teacher. And being both, I took both. And so I could see, the home struggles as well as the educational struggles all in one. And taking it, you have to have a pediatrician approval to get the medication and to do the testing and have it approved. And so when he was looking through it, he's like, oh yeah, she tops the scale, completely tops the scale on every level here with the inattentiveness. So it was definitely a big struggle for her. And so that's the big benefit I've seen and the positive that's come out of it. And now child number three, we've also chosen to medicate for. His struggles are, he's also very hyperactive as well as the inattentive. He's a little boy, and boys are always often very hyperactive in general. Hyperactive is an easy thing I feel like to deal with, but it's that inattentive lack of focus that's really been the struggle in our home. We have kind of the symptoms of ADHD that we could outline here. I think we both came up with those there and have lists here.
Yeah, just the not being able to focus, right? Mm-hmm. Hyperactivity, being impulsive. What else do you have on there?
I've got a lot more. Careless mistakes, easily distracted. They seem like they're never listening to you. That has been a really big one, especially for my son. I'll ask him to do something, and it usually takes about the fifth time before it kind of clicks on in his brain. He's like, oh, wait, what? And it's because he's so focused on something else. Following through with instructions is a really big struggle in our home as well. If you give them more than one instruction at once, it's not going to happen. So I've learned that I can only give one task or one instruction at a time, especially the younger ones, where they're going to happen, like going to follow through on them. Constant wiggling, always losing things. They can't keep their room organized to save their lives, but their whole life is disorganized. It's like they drop a shoe here and a sock here, and they don't remember where anything is ever. And it's just like this constant battle of finding things. Excessive talking can be a big one. Temper and moods can also be a really big struggle. They can have really big mood swings that are hard to manage. And then impulsiveness is a big one as well.
So there's an interesting book called David and Goliath. Have you ever read this by Malcolm Gladwell? It's a fantastic book. He quotes two people in there that have language in it. And so I'm so sad because there's no language in the book except for when he's quoting somebody else. But it talks about how David and Goliath is going, and Goliath obviously had the upper hand, right? Mm-hmm. Here he is. He's this big guy, and they've gone in and to do tests that Goliath possibly could have had bad eyesight because he could have had this disease that made him so large, right? And so David was not going to go fight him in man-to-man combat. He's going to take a sling, which he, like, they've done studies at the rate that the sling can go when you are a proficient sling thrower, if that's like the right term for it, right, is like a bullet. Like, it can go so fast. So when you look at it from that point of view, like, here's David, a kid who's out in the fields all the time. He's chased off bears, or not bears, but wolves and other animals trying to kill the sheep, right? And so he just made he made it to his advantage, right? If he went and attacked Goliath head on, he would have lost. So he had to attack Goliath from his where he would win. And so what I love about the book is it takes things like dyslexia, or, and I don't know if it specifically says ADHD, but I'm going to throw that in there, where sometimes we look at them and think that these are like, I have to go fight a Goliath. There's no way it would work. But instead it says, no, make the playing ground to your favor. Mm-hmm. And so with ADHD, I like to think of, what if we looked at it a different way of like, why can't you hold still? Like, just hold still. Like, this is a gift. Or how do I help you tap into your greatness? And you talked about that too, that there are some gifts that come along.
Yeah. So I have a really big list of positives as well, because I hate throwing out this list of like, here's all the negative qualities of my kids, because it's not really about that. Those are struggles that they have, but I love some of the amazing qualities that have come because of this disorder, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, that they have been diagnosed with. ADHD kids are highly creative and artistic, and I love it. They have, their heads are full of daydreams all the time, and they're full of all these ideas. They're constantly dreaming up things in their heads, and they are hyper-focused. And this is something that I love about them so much. When they have something in their mind that they want to accomplish, that's the only thing they think about. And you have to like drag them away from it pretty much. So like, for instance, my son, my 9-year-old, he will decide that he wants to, I don't know, build a slingshot. For example, we're talking about Goliath. And so if he's going to build a slingshot, that's the only thing that he's going to do until that slingshot is built. And if I try to get him to do his schoolwork while his mind is on that slingshot, it's not going to happen. And so that's something that I've learned, and I know that. And so I have to let him get whatever that is out of his system if needed, or let him just go and build that slingshot, because that's educational as well. But it's a really cool thing, I think. It can be hard when there's other things they have to get done, but it can also be just this amazing thing.
Yeah.
They notice stuff that others don't notice because of that hyper-focusedness. Is that a word? They really notice things that often the rest of us will not, because of their artistic and creative minds. They see things differently. They're super positive and enthusiastic about life for the most part. My kids are anyway. And I've seen that in many other kids who struggle with this as well, where they've just got this joy of life and they're excited and they're happy. And yes, they have an abundance of energy, but can't that be a beautiful thing too? We need people with an abundance of energy in our world. We can't all just be lazy and slothful. We need energy. They can be super spontaneous, which is awesome as well. I love people that are spontaneous, because I'm not very, I'm a lot more methodical, and I like to plan things out and have a routine. And so to have kids in my life that are spontaneous is good for me, to kind of pull me out of my normalcy from time to time. And they have a lot of energy and drive for things that really matter to them. And that's kind of the key, the 4 things that matter to them. If it matters, they'll give it everything they have. So great qualities, right? Those are awesome. And I love that.
So I'm going to share with you guys 3 different books, different, I guess, quote unquote, professionals that I'm talking about treating ADHD without medicine. So the first one is Howard Glasser's book, Transforming the Intense Child Workbook. I like the workbook 100 times better than the other book. Have you read the other book?
No, I haven't read it.
Okay, I never finished it. I think it's called The Transforming the Difficult Child.
Oh yeah, I've heard
it. And I could never get through it, but the workbook is really like straightforward. So it's really,
that's good to know.
So he is I want to say either a therapist or psychologist, but he treats children. And others kept calling medical experts, was like, this is a disorder. And he was looking at it, was like, actually, how can I see this as a gift and channel it into greatness? And so he says he quote unquote cures ADHD, but like, I don't know if I agree that it's a disease in the first place. Like,
you know what I was going to say, if he doesn't consider it a disorder, then is there something to cure?
Right. And so, I mean, like that's his own wording, I guess. Mm-hmm. So through his process, he teaches to lean into the child's greatness and really just having things be very clear with them, with the rules, and helping, having them help create it, and putting in, like, letting go of the negative and emotion energy of, like, you're not listening to me again, you're not paying attention. But then anytime they do something that's really awesome with this energy, just praising them and pointing it out. So that's, I love that book for all sorts of things. And that just was an added bonus with the ADHD stuff in there.
I definitely should read that.
Yeah, I have it. You can use it. So let's see. The next book is Simplicity Parenting. And it is another, I don't know what the MED stands for, like, but I know he's like a therapist or a psychologist. Mm-hmm. So it's Kim John Payne.
Like
it's
a master in education or something like that. I'm not sure. I have read this book.
Sorry.
I'm not either. We'll figure that one out.
So he is really big on treating ADD and ADHD with a drug-free approach. So he's been working for years with other colleagues to treat this, and he does call it a disorder, right? Oh, he actually just says, I don't like the label. So he's saying, let's see. Okay.
I'm just going to interject for 1 second. When we started Elsie's medication, we didn't tell her why she was taking it. We just called it her cleaning medicine. And because she was six when we started, which is actually really young. And it was like the smallest possible dosage possible. And we called it her cleaning medicine. And she's like, oh, I got to take my cleaning medicine so I can clean my room. And it was just kind of cute because we also didn't want her to feel labeled and like you have a disorder. Because I don't really feel like she has a disorder. She's wonderful.
Yeah.
Anyway.
She's a cute girl. So he goes on to say that you can have on the spectrum, you can go from quirk to disorder if you add in stress. So if you have a quirk, let's say like cleaning your room, right? Like you're kind of a messy person. That would be my sweet husband, bless his beautiful heart. So that would be, I guess, a quirk is what he's calling it. So if you had a formula and you did quirk plus stress, it will give you disorder. So he talks about that with ADHD, if you can kind of relieve some of the stress. So he's really big, I mean, Simplicity Parenting, about simplifying their lives. Simplifying the toys, simplifying media, simplifying video games, simplifying their diet so that they didn't have high sugar, high carbs, stuff like that. That by helping them manage their stress levels, that then he's seeing a lot of success of this drug-free approach to help children master it versus medicate it.
Yeah, and I definitely agree that those are important things. I have a whole big old list of tips for homeschooling kids with ADHD, because even with medication, it helps, it tones it down, but it's all still there. It doesn't mask or take away any of those things. It just kind of decreases, if that makes sense. They still struggle with focus, even when they've taken their medication. They still struggle with cleaning their room, but things are a lot easier. But a lot of things that I have learned over the years are, yeah, those exact things with their bedrooms, for instance, the less they have in their room, the easier it is for them to organize what's there. And the same with toys. You know, the less toys we have, the easier it is for the kids to keep them clean, right? The less that's on their plate, the less stressed they're going to be and the less overwhelmed they're going to be. Same with like instructions I mentioned. You know, if you tell your child to go do these four things and they forget on the way to the first thing what all those four things are, they're going to be, you know, you're not going to be upset with them if you just give them the one task and they just, you know, on the way, they forget still, which is what happens most of the time. It's less stressful and it's less worrisome of, oh, you didn't go do this and this and this and this. It's just the one thing and there's less burden on them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Can I ask a clarifying question?
Yeah.
So if, I don't know how to say this the right way. So if they still are inattentive or still hyperactive, then is like, what is the point of the medicine?
Okay. I will tell you that I see massive differences on the days that they do not take their medication. Mm-hmm. For instance, yesterday, Elsie forgot. Her school day was a disaster. Like she got one thing done. She kept running outside to swing all day. And I'd pull her back in. I'd say, okay, we need to, you know, you need to get this thing done. You need to do your math or whatever it is. And it's pretty much like she cannot accomplish almost anything in her day because she can't hone down and focus. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
No, it does. I'm just curious.
Not a single chore was done, and only one school assignment got finished yesterday. And it wasn't until about 3 p.m. that I was like, did you take your pill today? Like, oh, I didn't. She's like, that's what's wrong. So it's really like about keeping their whole brain organized for them. And it really like calms down. They've got so much going inside and it just sort of calms down all the thoughts so that they can sit and focus and accomplish things that they need to do. And the days that they don't, it's as if they're running wild and free like little animals.
Okay.
And that's the, I mean, that sounds terrible, but that's the difference on the days that they are on their medication and the days that they're not.
So the last book I loved that I just recently read is Genius Foods by Max Lugavere. And his story is his mom got dementia like in her 50s. And he was going to doctors and they were like, here's this pill that's going to just prolong her life. And here's this pill that takes care of the side effects from that pill. And like, he wanted to do preventative stuff. So the book actually is just about genius foods, foods to eat for the best quality.
Did he cure it? Because I've heard about this story.
Well, she was already too gone. Like she was.
Okay. I did hear a story about somebody who did this with their mom with dementia, and she came out of it because of her diet change. And I was like, that is the coolest thing ever.
They did talk about a guy who had been already, like he'd already tried the medical route like 15 years, so a long time. And his wife was like a pediatrician or something else, but obviously had medical knowledge. And she was like, this is not working. So she switched his diet and like the disease considerably, like he was pretty far down the road. Mm-hmm. He saw like a higher quality life for the next, however long he was able to live. That's awesome. He was able to write his name again and was able to do all these cognitive skills again. So he really talks about like what a big role food plays on our mental health and goes into, and I love it because it's not just opinion. Like, I feel like broccoli is good for you and like bananas are the devil, right? Like when books are like that, I'm like, I like when it's backed by science. And so everything has a science research with it. And he wrote it with a medical doctor. And he just goes into with ADHD that a lot of it can be helped with diet. And what they're talking about too is the sugars, the breads, like all those things that are kind of give you the brain fog. Candy, a lot of things that probably a lot of kids eat. But they talked about too that, and this is one of the benefits with homeschooling, is a guy in there was able to quote unquote cure his ADHD, right? By just giving himself variety, that he did not like being an assembly line type worker. And so homeschooling would be a great thing because it's not just sit down, do your math and like just sit here, that it could be a great opportunity that with diet and with all these other things that like, yeah, I'm going to go play for a little bit and to kind of come up with a plan with them of plan of attack.
Yeah. And I 100% agree with the food. 100%. I've seen like drastic differences in my kids' behavior based on their diet. I used to years ago, we would have sugar cereal Saturday and I would buy like, I don't even remember, some kind of sugary cereal. I don't usually ever let them have that, but on Saturday I would let them. And after about a couple of months of this, I started just noticing these patterns of like Saturdays were a disaster. My kids were awful. Like, what is going on with my kids? And when I made that connection, I was like, well, of course, obviously, you know, they're having the dyes and the sugar and all these things that are not good for them. And when I took that out, it made a huge difference. But I've noticed that in so many different things with foods, when they're eating well and they're not having sugar and they're not having food with dyes and a lot of preservatives, then they're much better behaved. And
that's awesome.
It's a big, big difference.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. I just wanted to go through a couple of tips. I don't know where we are in our time, but
I don't know, it doesn't show up on
but just because it homeschooling with ADHD. So I wanted to give you my tips of like some important things for you that if your child has this, whether you choose to medicate or not is the whole point necessarily, but the main point is how you can help them during your school day. My biggest number one issue is keeping calm, because if I'm not calm, then nothing's going to go well. So often you get really frustrated with your children because they're not focused and because they're not paying attention or listening to you. And if you lose your cool, they're not going to focus and they're not going to be able to learn.
That's so, true though, for, I think, with all of your kids.
For anyone, right? Yeah, for like, anyone.
Yeah.
Once I learned how to manage my daughter and to know that this is the way she works and this is the way she learns and to control my emotions around her when I was feeling frustrated, things went a lot more smoothly and it was a big change for us. Second is to limit distractions. Because kids are easily distracted, the less distractions you have around them, the better things are going to go. So that would be, you know, if one child's watching TV in the other room and this child's supposed to be doing their math, it's not going to go well, right? Or whatever it might be, things that are going on that easily pull them away. So she would often cry and just say, it's too loud. There's too much going on and I can't focus. And so often I would just have her go into her bedroom and sit on her bed and close her door. And if she were alone in a quiet place, it was so much easier for her to function and to get her schoolwork done. And this is still the case for her. If all my kids are in our main school room doing things, it just tends to get a little louder. So if I remove her and put her in the living room on the couch and work with her there, then it's just a lot easier for them to focus. So whatever distractions might be around, whether it's noise, whether it's piano, whatever that bothers them, that'll make it a lot easier. Number three, and I've kind of touched on this, but give clear and simple instructions and giving them one at a time. So if you want them to do a list of tasks, just start with the first one. And just say, right now, I want you to write this sentence. And if you start with, you've got this whole page of things you've got to write, they'll look at that and they'll just be overwhelmed and be stressed and it'll be too much for them to process all at once. So just give them the first thing. And then once they've accomplished that first thing, then you can give them the next step. So giving them pieces of it is a lot easier for them to handle. Next, what am I on? Four, be close to them so you can offer assistance. And I think that's the case for any younger children learning, but my kids in particular, it seems like math always seems to be a big stressor. It always was for my older daughter. But I would just often have to sit right by her side so that when something came to her that overwhelmed her or stressed her out, I was just there to calm her and just to be by her side. And it was okay, we can work through this. That's not that big of a problem. You know, let's write it out. Let's take it one line at a time, you know, and it's the same now with my 9-year-old. He's doing carrying with multiplication and he sees the problem and he's like, I can't do that. Of course you can. You've learned these, you know, your multiplication facts. So we write it out. What's the first line? You know, and if you just do it one little task at a time, it's just a lot easier for them to prevent the meltdowns that are going to come. And then another just really big important one is allowing breaks for movement and snacks. They need them more frequently than most kids. They need to move. Give them a 5-minute run around the yard break. Give them a little snack. Sometimes just having them snacking while doing a harder school subject keeps them motivated and calmer, like a little bowl of raisins or nuts or whatever it is that they can just munch on while they're doing their school can just keep them on task a little easier. Sometimes we do movement with learning, like spelling while tossing a ball, or, you know, jumping as you say each letter or something like that, that just the movement helps their brain to kind of function a little better. And so including movement in it will make things easier on them. And then if I'm reading aloud to my kids, they're the ones that tend to lose focus more easily. And so if you give them something to color or something busy for their hands, they're going to much more easily focus on the story being read to them. And then the final one is just offering regular encouragement and support for them without comparison. I think that's a really important step, is the comparison, because kids are all going to learn differently and react differently. And if they know they're just different, they're not better or worse or whatever they may think, they're just a little different and they learn a little differently. Don't point it out as a weakness, but as just, oh, you learn this way, he learns this way, and that's okay. And just make sure that they're good where they are.
Yeah. So on my little hippie side, I was just gonna, my last thought was the dangers of medication. of side effects. So it's interesting when you take an herb, right? Your body will use the herb and the side effects are like that it will help other organs, or it's also good for your hair. And so your body will just use anything. And so when it takes a drug, a pharmaceutical drug, there are always side effects, right? That like a Tylenol affects your liver. And cough syrup is really just alcohol, but which also affects your liver, right? And so, and then you have the syrups and the dyes and all those types of things that you were just talking about. So with ADHD, with Adderall and Ritalin, which are probably the two most common prescribed, they increase levels of the brain's chemical dopamine and provide mental stimulation. But they found that you can get the same stimulation with meth. And the Adderall and Ritalin are doing the same thing to your brain that meth does to your brain. And so it was interesting, like we have this opioid, epidemic, like teens abusing it. And now teens are starting to abuse these ADHD drugs because you can get that same high on it. Some are now turning to meth because it's cheaper to get meth than it is to get the ADHD drugs. And so it just like, it comes with a cost, a risk, right?
Anything's going to, any kind of pharmaceutical or non-natural product is definitely going to come with a risk or cost. But I will tell you that from my husband's perspective as a therapist, he said that kids that struggle with ADHD and are not medicated are typically the ones that are more likely to be suicidal because they have so many struggles that they can't figure them out and work through them. And they feel like such a failure so often that studies have shown that more often those kids tend to be suicidal. I don't want to get in arguments either.
I know, I'm like trying to be so careful.
I know, I am too. So we love each other. We're good on this, but we just want to get both sides and both opinions. And it's highly regulated. Like, for instance, my kids, when I get their medication, I can't get it. It has to be less than a week from the month of their last prescription. Like, I cannot get an extra dosage. So, like, if they spill some of their pills, we're out. Like, that's too bad. You know, like, if they get wet or dumped in the drain or something, which hasn't happened, luckily. But you can't get extras. They're highly regulated and really, I mean, I guess any drug can be sold wherever. But it's not an easy to come by thing. So in terms of abusing, it's harder to do.
Yeah. So it has like some short-term effects like loss of appetite, increased heart rate, nausea, can mess with your sleep patterns, hallucinations. I didn't know that was one. And it can even have convulsions and seizures. And then long-term effects, it's hard on your liver, your kidney, your lungs, heart, blood vessels and stuff like that. And even respiratory. If you add, it keeps going. but also a psychological dependence upon it. And so I guess we'll end with like you've heard both of our thoughts, and ultimately you get to decide what is best for your family. Take it. And because sometimes some of these medicines can give somebody just a boost and then get going, and then it can be something you can go off of and like, hey, how is this a gift? How is this great? But I think it comes down to you.
Sorry to interject.
Yeah.
My sister, one of her kids, she started on some medication, and then after, I don't know how long she had him on it, but after 6 months to a year or so, she pulled him off. And she's like, I wanted to just get him on to help him learn routines and learn systems. And once he realized he could function this way and he could do it this way, we pulled him off so that he could see, okay, I can do this. And I learned these things and learned these routines. And she's been able to manage really well that way.
That's awesome.
And I want to leave just on a non-drug note. because I like that better. But I just want you to know that it's really very possible to be successful at homeschooling a child with ADHD. I know a lot of parents struggle with that and think they can't. But I honestly think that in so many ways, they're better off in the home than in the school setting because of these struggles that they are having, because of their inattention and, you know, their movement and those kinds of things. it's a blessing to be able to homeschool them and to have them at home with you and to give them that one-on-one support that they're going to need and they won't be able to get in a school setting. And you can give them confidence and security in who they are, and they won't feel like a failure when you're their teacher and you're giving them, you know, those positive boosts. And yeah. Well, so you can really do it.
Sorry. You've got the assembly line too.
Definitely. Yeah.
And somebody who maybe needs a lot of their time broken up into different chunks, mm-hmm. that could be very, very successful.
Definitely. Yeah. Okay. So hopefully this has been helpful for you guys. There's a lot to think about and a lot to consider in this topic. So I think it's great that we've been able to give you varying sides and you can decide what feels right for your family. And I don't think that there's a right and a wrong way. I think that each child and each family and each parent is going to have their own right and wrong. And so I'm really hope that you can find that for your child and make the best decision in your home.
Absolutely. Go on your gut. You're probably yes. right. Okay. Love you guys. And we'll see you
Thanks
next week.
Thanks for listening today.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Called to Homeschool. Be sure to subscribe and we'd love to hear your comments or questions. You can find all our show notes on calledtohome.com.